This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehias Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Chad's government says it needs immediate assistance from the international community to help returnees, refugees, and host communities that need protection, material, and humanitarian aid.
That's reporter Moki Edwin Kinzeka on how a huge influx of Sudanese refugees is overwhelming neighboring Chad. Details coming up. Also, Chad says it's getting harder to host 2 million refugees and displaced persons. And U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is back in Israel to help navigate a way out of the conflict there. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken returned today to Israel after talks in 6 Arab states, hoping to coordinate efforts against Hamas while finding ways to alleviate Gaza's humanitarian crisis. Israel's border with Gaza is not the only one to watch. Violence is also rising on Israel's northern border with Lebanon. Powerful militant group Hezbollah launched a missile into Israel yesterday morning. To brief us more on U.S. diplomatic efforts in the conflict, we have VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell standing by. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Anita.
Thank you so much.
So among the big issues confronting diplomats are getting humanitarian aid into Gaza, which is under an Israeli blockade, as well as getting foreign citizens out of Gaza. Has the U.S. been able to make any progress on those issues?
Well, the White House is working furiously, as we know, with all of this this lightning-fast shuttle-stop diplomacy that Antony Blinken is making, that other top officials are making. So they are definitely seized to the matter and working on the problem. But as it stands right now, we heard the UN say today that there's less than 24 hours' worth of food, fuel, and water for Gaza, and that the issue is that the Israelis are not allowing aid workers access to the one border crossing between Egypt and Gaza. So this is where we stand right now.
So the opening of a second front in the north with Hezbollah and Iran in the background, does that pose a real risk of an escalation to this conflict?
I would say definitely. I mean, what is the stated motto of some of the Iranian leadership? It's death to America. These are nihilists with nuclear weapons. Getting them drawn into the conflict is inevitably going to escalate the conflict and have global implications. So that's definitely one of the big picture issues that the Biden administration is dealing with, in addition to the pressing humanitarian concerns.
Is there any sense of what President Biden has been discussing with his security team today?
Well, one of the administration's top priorities are the 13 unaccounted for Americans. On Saturday, the president spent over an hour on the phone with those families, speaking to them about their loved ones. This is, of course, always going to be the priority of any head of state, their own people who are under duress and in need of help in another place. So that is definitely one of the priorities. The other, as we just talked about, is preventing escalation, and then, of course, these pressing humanitarian concerns in and around Gaza.
I'm sure you're aware of this, Anita. The United States named a coordinator to spearhead humanitarian relief into Gaza, retired Ambassador David Satterfield, who was expected to arrive in Israel today. Has he arrived, and will he make a difference?
Well, I don't know his exact itinerary, but what I do know about Satterfield is he was memorably the same envoy tasked to help work with Ethiopian leaders on the peace process. And he quit that job after 3 months, citing a lack of progress, insufficient White House attention to the region, and weakened U.S. influence in Khartoum and Addis Ababa. So what's interesting here is he does have the advantage of very sufficient White House attention to the region. But this is, of course, a very difficult job that he has, balancing not just, you know, many countries, many access points, many security concerns, also many languages, many ethnicities, many religious backgrounds, into this big diplomatic puzzle.
And lastly, Anita, Israel's government has invited Biden to visit the country soon. Is that likely to happen?
All I can tell you is that right now, Joe Biden is not where he said he was going to be on Monday, which is Colorado. He canceled that trip today and met with his security team in the White House this morning. That could be any time, really, in the morning. And he hasn't answered one way or the other about whether he's going to respond to this invitation to visit Israel. But it looks like his schedule is somewhat clear today.
VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell, thank you for your input.
Thank you.
Nigeria's president has asked the Supreme Court to reject a petition by his political opponents to introduce new evidence aimed at overturning February's presidential election. Timothy Obiezu reports from the Nigerian capital, Abuja.
Nigerian President Bola Tinubu's plea to the Supreme Court was contained in his response to an appeal made by the main opposition People's Democratic Party PDP candidate Atiku Abubakar. Abubakar seeks to present new evidence at the Supreme Court in a bid to annul Tinubu's victory, which was upheld last month by a lower court after weeks of litigation. This following a U.S. court ordering Chicago State University to release Tinubu's academic records to Abubakar's lawyers. Abubakar alleges that Tinubu submitted a forged diploma to Nigeria's Electoral Commission. The U.S. university confirms Tinubu received a bachelor's degree from the school but could not authenticate the diploma. The PDP said Tinubu's certificate from the university varied from the one he submitted to the electoral body and before the court. The opposition party also said the president's documents indicated it was a female student who attended the school and not Tinubu, leading to allegations of possible identity theft. The president said the opposition appeal is devoid of merit and asked the higher court to dismiss it. Felix Morka is the national publicity secretary of the ruling All Progressives Congress Party, APC. He spoke to VOA by phone.
The Supreme Court in this instance is not a court of trial. It is a court of final, appellate determination. The rules of court and the rules of practice and judicial precedents do not support a litigant. You cannot, at this stage, seek to introduce fresh evidence. Atiku Abubakar is only trying to use every opportunity to, malign this president, perpetrate his lies and falsehoods.
Abubakar and Peter Obi, the second place finisher in February's presidential election, are challenging Tinubu's win and the ruling last month upholding his victory. Morka says the opposition parties are desperate.
These guys are just desperate for attention. In their defeat, they need to, go get some counseling and get a perspective.
February's presidential election was the most controversial since Nigeria's return to democracy in 1999. The election was marred by violence and widespread allegations of vote manipulation. Frank Schreibel is Atiku Abubakar's spokesperson. He says the ruling party must answer important questions.
In the last, I think of a dying horse. He's struggling. We're expecting to struggle. It's not about Atiku Abubakar wanting to be president at all costs. It is about the people of Nigeria. The only thing that is left to the Nigerian people, that is, their integrity and their honor is what he wants to erode, because he has eroded our finances, he has eroded our economy by removing fuel subsidies without a plan.
The Supreme Court is expected to decide on the appeal next month. It is not clear if the Supreme Court will admit any new evidence before passing final judgment on the matter. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Chad says it is increasingly finding it difficult to meet the humanitarian needs of 2 million foreigners and displaced persons seeking refuge among its about 16 million civilians. The Central African country's president says the situation is compounded by an influx of people, many of them women and children, fleeing violence and increasing hardship in neighboring Sudan. Moki Edwin Kindeka reports from Chad's neighbor Cameroon.
Chad's President Mahamat Idriss Deby says several thousand Sudanese refugees entered Adre, a town in Gudai province, within the past 2 weeks. Adre, located in the southeastern Chad, is home to more than 210,000 Sudanese refugees, which is about four times more than the town's population, according to the government. The refugees started arriving in the region in April when Sudan descended into violence. President Deby spoke in a message broadcast on Chad state television this week.
A different case.
Deby says civilians in towns and villages that share a border with Chad are fighting over limited resources, with millions of people fleeing several crises in neighboring countries. He says, "I am urging my people whom I know live in poverty to accept, receive and protect refugees and displaced persons who come to our country in deteriorating health situations caused by conflicts in neighboring states." Chad is one of the world's poorest countries. The nation also has faced several fragility and institutional challenges in a region rife with conflict. But Chad's government says about 2 million people in a country of close to 18 million inhabitants are seeking refuge. They include civilians fleeing Boko Haram atrocities and violent conflicts between fishers and herders in Cameroon, Nigeria and Niger, and Central African Republic inhabitants who fled violence as fighting erupted in their country in 2013. Chad says since violent conflicts also began in Sudan in April, more than 400,000 Sudanese refugees and nearly 52,000 Chadian returnees have arrived in towns and villages in eastern Chad. Humanitarian organizations, including the United Nations Refugee Agency, say the influx puts a massive strain on already fragile resources and engenders conflicts between displaced persons, refugees, and host communities. 31-year-old Amina Abo says she arrived in Adre from Darfur, a western Sudanese town, this week. She spoke Wednesday on Chad's state TV. She says she could not bear the shock when her husband was killed in Darfur 2 weeks ago, and she decided to move with her two children. She says she and her children have been hungry since they arrived in Chad, with scores of women and children. The United Nations estimates that by the end of the year, 600,000 refugees are expected to arrive in Chad from Sudan. Chad's government says it needs immediate assistance from the international community to help returnees, refugees, and host communities that need protection, material, and humanitarian aid, including food, shelter, water, and sanitation. Sudan descended into violence in April when two rival military factions that had held the capital Khartoum hostage extended attacks to other parts of the country, including the western Darfur region, where it reignited long-standing ethnic and intercommunal tensions. West Darfur State is the epicenter of conflicts in the region, with reports of widespread violence against civilians, according to the United Nations. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. In Liberia, the National Elections Commission is urging citizens to remain calm until it announces the final results of last Tuesday's vote. This after observers predict a possible presidential runoff between incumbent George Weah and main challenger Joseph Boakai. The commission has until October 25th to announce final vote tallies. Results released so far by the electoral body show Weah with a slight lead with 43.80% of the votes, while former Vice President Joseph Boakai follows with 43.54% of the vote. Analysts say if none of the 20 candidates wins more than 50% of the votes, a runoff will be held between the top two. For the latest developments, VOA's Peter Cloete reached Henry Flomo. He is the spokesperson for Liberia's National Elections Commission.
We are still at a point that the results have been read by the chairperson and the rest of the board members. And we are also at a point where Liberians will have to wait, as they've been doing, until the results are all announced and the winners are being declared as provided by law.
So how long should Liberians wait for the final results? Because I hear over 70% of the results have been released so far. So how long should they wait till the Electoral Commission declares the final outcome of the election results?
Well, legally, they have up to 15 days from the 11th of October. The law gives the commission max 15 days, but it can also be done before the end of the 15th day. But like you said, we've gone far into the numbers already. So I'm sure the chairperson and the rest of the board might be done with this probably in the next 2 days. I really hope so.
Liberians have been talking about a possible runoff based on the elections results released so far. In the case nobody is able to attain the 50% plus one technical threshold to be declared winner, for especially in the presidential election, what happens?
So the law says the first parties with the highest votes will go for a runoff. That's the law.
And what is the period within which the Electoral Commission will organize the runoff?
That's like 2 weeks. So normally it'll be in the first 2 weeks of November. The last time, so assuming that the final announcement is done, maybe like say tomorrow, just for hypothetical, then you count 15 days from there, you can have a runoff. But I can't speak to whether there will be a runoff or not. What we can do is the chairperson today will again lead the board in announcing additional numbers. So once those numbers are done, all of the 5,890 polling places are done, then we'll know whether there is a second round or there is a straight win.
I understand the National Electoral Commission is calling on the people of Liberia to remain calm as the election results are being released. But some people are saying the National Electoral Commission is delaying in announcing the result and expectations are too high. How do you react to such concerns?
Well, the chairperson continues to say that they are reading the numbers that have been tallied from the various tally centers across the country. So I don't see any reason to feel that something is intentional. She continues to say what they have is what they read.
That was Henry Flomo, spokesperson for Liberia's National Elections Commission, speaking with VOA's Peter Cloete. With media outlets worldwide competing with social media for audiences, some are turning to what is known as solutions journalism to offer audiences a more in-depth and proactive approach to issues such as climate change. From Nairobi, Kenya, Victoria Amunga has the story.
For years, local radio journalist Henix Obuchunju reported on issues important to his community, such as gender-based violence or GBV. But the Nairobi, Kenya-based journalist says the reports weren't having the effect he had hoped for.
Most of these stories were about, you know, GBV, where I come from or where I serve as a journalist. But at the end of the day, you get frustrated because you've not helped this listener to move a step ahead.
So Obuchunju switched his approach and trained in solutions journalism, a style of reporting that focuses on responses to social problems along with problems themselves. Two of his reports that adopted this style of media won recognition in Kenya.
And I'm already mentoring other young journalists who want to pursue that particular route. I mean, yes, not all of us would do politics, not all of us would do other stories. But in any story that we do, what is this new thing in terms of a solution?
The trend toward solutions journalism comes as media compete with social media for audiences' attention. with studies showing younger people using social media sites like TikTok more often for their information, and a growing number of news avoiders, people disengaged from news entirely, media are looking for ways to reconnect with audiences. As solutions journalism gathers momentum, media trainers like Kiundu Waweru are helping. He has trained over 100 reporters so far on covering topics including health, technology, and climate change.
No longer not many people wait for 9 o'clock news or for tomorrow's newspaper that has yesterday's news. Yeah, so what can a journalist do different from the people that are online? I think these new ways of telling stories, you know, investigative, solutions-based stories to engage the audiences more.
More solutions-based journalism reports are coming into newsrooms, says Mary Mwendwa, an editor at the news website Talk Africa. Mwendwa told VOA that the approach helps keep the mainstream media relevant.
We come in as a mainstream media because, you see, for you to address a problem and bring in a solution, you take the reader through a trailer. You start stating there's climate change, somebody is having an innovation around this subject, these are the challenges they are facing. So you take the reader through a certain trail, which social media will not do, because social media, it's about clicks.
Television and radio remain a dominant news platform in Kenya, so media trainers hope that reaching the next generation of journalists will ensure they can still have an impact on the community they cover. Victoria Amunga, VOA News, Nairobi.
Guinea's mangrove forests are a vital sanctuary for a variety of endangered species, from the colobus monkey to the African mantay. But illegal logging is threatening them, Anika Hamashlag reports.
Beneath Guinea's dense canopy of mangroves, an illicit industry is thriving. Loggers such as Mamadou Diallo are illegally chopping upwards of 40 trees per day. He says it's a dangerous job that's causing great harm to the mangroves. I do it because I have no other means of income, he says. That's why I give myself to this work, even though it's very hard and threatens the ecosystem. Guinea was once home to a 300-kilometer stretch of pristine mangrove forest. But now, large swaths lay barren. Rapid urbanization of the country's capital, Conakry, has increased pressure on Guinea's natural resources. And chronic political instability has created a safe haven for illegal loggers. Mangroves filter pollutants from the water, protect coastlines from storm surges, and sink massive amounts of carbon, a critical role in the fight against climate change. They also provide essential habitat for wildlife, such as monkeys, migratory birds, and the elusive African manatee, of which there are only about 10,000 left. Kolanga Kamara is a researcher with the African Aquatic Conservation Fund. He researches manatees through a project funded by the Mohammed bin Zayed Species Conservation Fund. He says the fish feed on manatee feces, so if we don't protect the manatee, tomorrow or after tomorrow, will we not have difficulties catching fish? Mangrove wood is used mainly for construction, charcoal production, and smoking fish. The forests are also slashed to make room for rice paddies. Guinea outlawed mangrove logging decades ago. Legislators have since revised the laws to further protection, yet logging continues out in the open. Enforcement has been difficult, says Karim Samoura, General Secretary of Guinea's Ministry of Environment and Sustainable Development. It's unfortunate to say, he says, but in Guinea, we're often in a situation where progress is made on a project, but when the project ends, there are few who try to move things forward. In the end, the projects aren't taken up properly by new managers, which often means there are breakdowns, he says. Samora says he plans to relaunch surveillance of the mangroves and to diversify income-generating activities of nearby communities. Meanwhile, experts say Guinea's mangroves and the animals that live within will continue to pay the price. Annika Hammerschlag for VOA News, Dubraka, Guinea.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Cornelius Tanner, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.